The following is from pages 210 through 212 of the printed edition. This is the way. Gaspar Nyangera. Born, 1954. Baptized, 1978. Profile. A fearless fighter for the truth with a ready smile and a positive attitude. Now married with three daughters, Gaspar is a member of the Rwanda Branch Committee.
After the shooting started in the early morning of April 7th, I saw that about 15 houses belonging to Tutsi were burning. They included two of our brothers' houses. Would our house be next? I nearly went out of my mind for fear of what could happen to my wife, who is a Tutsi, and my two children. It was not clear to me what we should do. There was confusion and panic, along with rumors and false reports. I thought it would be safer for my wife and children to go to a brother's house nearby, and I would join them later. When it was safe for me to go there, I found that she had been forced to flee to a large school complex. That afternoon, a neighbor came to me and said, "All the Tutsi seeking refuge at the school will be massacred." I immediately ran to the school, found my wife and children, and rounded up about 20 others, including brothers and sisters, telling them to return to their homes. As we were leaving, we saw the militia leading people out of town to a place where they murdered more than 2,000 Tutsi. In the meantime, the wife of another neighbor had given birth at the school complex. When the Interahamwe threw a grenade into the school, the husband fled with the newborn baby. In the panic, the mother fled in another direction. Despite being a Tutsi, the father managed to get through the roadblocks because of the baby in his arms, and he ran to our house. He asked me to try to get milk for the baby. When I dared to venture out, I unwittingly came to a roadblock manned by militia, taking me to be a Tutsi sympathizer because I was going to get milk for a Tutsi's baby. They said, "Let us kill him." A soldier hit me with his rifle butt, and I lost consciousness, bleeding from the nose and face. Believing me to be dead, they dragged me behind a nearby house. A neighbor recognized me and said, "You must leave, or they will come back and finish you off." He helped me get back home. Painful though it was, this incident proved to be a protection for me. Because I was known to be a driver, five men came the next day to compel me to be the driver for a military chief. Seeing my injuries, they did not insist, neither did they try to force me to do patrol duty with the Interahamwe. Then followed days of fear, uncertainty, and hunger. During that time, a Tutsi woman ran into my house with her two small children. We hid her in a cupboard in the kitchen and put the two children with mine in another room. When the Rwandan Patriotic Front, or RPF, the invading army, made further advances and it was rumored that the Interahamwe had started a mop-up operation to kill all Hutu who had Tutsi wives, our whole family got ready to flee again, but the RPF had already taken the area, so the Tutsi were out of danger. Now, however, I was in danger of being killed. I then went with a group of our neighbors to the roadblock that was now manned by the RPF soldiers. When they saw me, a Hutu, with my head bandaged, they thought I must be one of the militia. They called out to the neighbors and to me, "Among you, there are killers and looters. Yet you are asking for help? Who of you have hidden or protected Tutsi?" I showed them the woman and the children whom I had been hiding. Taking the children to one side, they asked them, "Who is this man with the bandaged head?" They replied, "He is not with the Interahamwe. He is one of Jehovah's Witnesses and is a good man." I had saved the Tutsi woman and her two children, and now they were saving me. Satisfied with those answers, the soldiers took us to a camp some 12 miles from Kigali, where about 16,000 survivors had gathered. There, we met up with about 60 brothers and sisters from 14 different congregations. We organized meetings. 96 attended the first one. It was a very hard time, however, as we received reports of friends who had been killed and sisters who had been raped. I was the only elder, and many brothers and sisters needed comfort and help from the Scriptures. I listened to their heart-rending stories and reassured them that Jehovah loved them and understood their pain. Finally, on July 10th, after many weeks of terror, we were able to return to our homes. I remember that during the fear and danger, I often found myself thinking of the song entitled, "This is the Way." The words of that song encouraged me greatly. No right or left turning we dare ever take, but walking in God's way, advancement will make. Returning to the account.
The story of Jean and Chantal. John Dedieu, or John Mugabo, a cheerful, caring brother, started studying with Jehovah's Witnesses in 1982. Before his baptism in 1984, he had already been in prison 3 times for his stand as one of Jehovah's Witnesses. His wife Chantal was also baptized in 1984, and they were married in 1987. When the genocide started, they had 3 children, all girls. The 2 older children were staying with their grandparents out of town, and only the baby of 6 months was with John and Chantal. The first day of the genocide, April 7, 1994, soldiers and the Interahamwe started attacking the homes of all Tutsi. John was arrested and beaten with clubs, but he managed to escape, and joined by another brother, he ran to the nearby Kingdom Hall. Meanwhile, unaware of what had happened to her husband, Chantal tried frantically to get out of town with the baby in order to rejoin their other 2 children. John relates what happened to him. The Kingdom Hall had previously been a bakery and still had a large chimney. For 1 week, the brother and I hid in the Kingdom Hall itself, and a Hutu sister brought us food when it was safe to do so. Later, we had to hide in the roof between the iron roofing sheets and the ceiling, where the sun absolutely roasted us during the day. Desperate to find a better hiding place, we managed to remove some bricks from the chimney stack and get into the chimney, where we continued to hide in a crouching position for more than a month. Nearby, there was a roadblock, and the Interahamwe militiamen often entered the Kingdom Hall to talk or to take shelter when it rained. We could hear them talking below. The sister continued to bring us food whenever possible. At times, I thought I would not be able to bear it any longer, but we kept praying for endurance. Finally, on May 16, the sister came to inform us that the Rwandan Patriotic Front had taken control of the side of town we were on and that we could come out of hiding. In the meantime, what had happened to Jean's wife, Chantal? She takes up the story. I managed to escape from the house with our baby on April 8. I found 2 sisters, Immaculée, whose identity card indicated that she was a Hutu, and Suzanne, a Tutsi. We intended to reach Bugesera, a town about 30 miles away where my other 2 children were staying with my parents. However, we heard that there were roadblocks barring all the roads out of town, so we decided to head for a nearby village just on the outskirts of Kigali, where Immaculée had a relative named Kahizi, who was also one of Jehovah's Witnesses. Kahizi, a Hutu, welcomed us, and despite threats from the neighbors, he did everything he could to help us. When the government soldiers and the Interahamwe learned that Gehazi had protected Tutsi, they shot him. After murdering Gehazi, the soldiers took us down to the river to kill us. Terrified, we waited for the end. Suddenly, there arose a heated dispute among the soldiers, and one of them said, "Do not kill the women. It will bring us bad luck. This is the time to kill only the men." Then, one of the brothers who had been following us, Andre Twahira, who had just been baptized the previous week, managed to take us to his place despite protests from neighbors. The next day, he accompanied us back to Kigali, where he hoped to find a safe place for us. He helped us get past several extremely dangerous roadblocks. Immaculée was carrying my baby, so that if we were stopped, the baby might be spared. Suzanne and I had torn up our identity cards in an attempt to conceal our identities. At one of the roadblocks, the Interahamwe hit Immaculée and said, "Why are you traveling with these Tutsi?" They would not let Suzanne and me pass. So Immaculée and Andre went ahead to Brother Ruakabubu's house. At great risk, Andre and 2 other brothers, Simon and Matthias,
helped us pass the last roadblock and took me to Brother Ruakabubu's house, while Suzanne went to the house of one of her relatives. However, it was now too dangerous for me to stay at Brother Ruakabubu's house, so with great difficulty, the brothers managed to get me to the Kingdom Hall, where other witnesses were being hidden. By then, 10 Tutsi brothers and sisters and others who had fled were already there. Immaculée was so faithful that she refused to leave me. She said, "If they kill you and I survive, I will save your baby." The footnote reads, "That baby is now a baptized sister." End of footnote. Meanwhile, a brother living nearby, Vedats Biminyamana, who had a Tutsi wife, had just managed to get his family to a safe place. After this, he came back to help those remaining in the Kingdom Hall to find a place of safety. Thankfully, they all survived. After the genocide, Jean and Chantal eventually learned that their parents and Jean and Chantal's 2-year-old and 5-year-old daughters, who had been staying with their grandparents, had been murdered, in addition to about 100 of their relatives. How did they feel about such devastating losses? "In the beginning, it was unbearable," admits Chantal. "We felt a kind of numbness. The loss of life had gone far beyond what anyone ever imagined. We could only leave it in Jehovah's hands, with the hope of seeing our children again in the resurrection."